Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. More details on Tuesday night's mass shooting that killed six in Chesapeake, Virginia. Our Mike Hempen has them.
Investigators say the Walmart supervisor who shot and killed six.
The U.S. ambassador in Kyiv, Bridget Brink, says the purpose of Russia's missile strikes is clear.
To put millions of people, men, women, and children in the cold and dark and without water at a time when temperatures are freezing.
Meanwhile, Karen Shamas reports the retaken city of Kherson has been coming under particularly heavy bombardment.
The sound of shelling thunders across the Kherson skyline. Ukrainian troops on the front line launch reconnaissance drones to determine the enemy's positions before firing. Kurt, a commander for a military unit, told the AP that Russian soldiers had taken up positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River. While the goal for Ukraine is to push the Russians further back, crossing the Dnipro River has become tricky as both sides have destroyed surrounding bridges. A day earlier, at least five people died in the city from Russian shelling. Nevertheless, the mood in Kherson remains defiant and resolute, as Kherson resident Valentina Pedina tells the AP, Putin wanted to take Kherson. Never. We will die here, but we will not give it to him. I'm Karen Chamas.
Alicia Raymond joined the crowds at the Lakeside Shopping Center in New Orleans.
I'm going to Victoria's Secret. I'm going to Bath & Body Works. I just got a new grandbaby, so I'm going to grandbaby shopping as well. And then I have a little birthday party launch on Sunday, so I need to get me a nice little outfit.
National Retail Federation's Catherine Cullen says it could be the busiest Black Friday weekend in 5 years.
Nearly 8 million more than we saw last year, and is the highest we've seen since 2017.
Elon Musk says Twitter will try to relaunch its premium service next week. It was shut down after a wave of imposter accounts. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal, so I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. Your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. If there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops. My dad wasn't around, and I remember riding a bike and falling off and cutting myself, and me never would just want to get back on it. People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike, and you didn't. I didn't teach them. I just created an environment where they taught themselves, and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Civic Media, I'm Jane Matney with your headlines. Wild turkeys are back in Wisconsin in a big way. WPR reporting that more than a century after Wisconsin's wild turkey population was nearly decimated, now the birds are flourishing, with many flocking to urban and suburban areas. By the late 1800s, most of Wisconsin's wild turkeys had been wiped out due to unregulated hunting and the destruction of their former habitats by the timber industry. Early efforts to restore the birds to those habitats were unsuccessful, partly because officials were trying to send birds raised in captivity out into the wild. Then in the 70s, Wisconsin's DNR negotiated a deal with Missouri's Department of Conservation to exchange ruffed grouse from Wisconsin for wild eastern turkeys from Missouri. Once they took hold here, the DNR began trapping some of the birds and relocating them to other areas of Wisconsin where conditions were right for them to thrive. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
From some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Here at the UAW Hall in Racine, Wisconsin. Working Class Heroes Radio Tour. Remember, you can check out the website, thericksmithshow.com, to find out where we've been, where we're going. And if you've missed any of our tour, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, you will find ours. One of the questions I keep coming back to, folks, is, you know, these union jobs, these were the basis of what built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. I go back to my grandparents' generation. The idea that they came back from fighting fascism overseas to fight on the factory floors for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for themselves, but also for the future. And I look at the conversations we're having here in Racine with the workers at Case New Holland, and I keep coming back to, how did things go awry? What went wrong? How is it that now this company, which was 150 years in this community they've been here, this was the driver of prosperity for working class people. And now it's, well, from what I've been hearing from folks, it's just another job paying subpar wages with crummy benefits. How did that happen? And here to share some thoughts and maybe fill in some of the gaps, I've asked Jeff to come talk with us. Jeff is a retired Case New Holland worker, also a UAW member here. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So, you know, I go back to this, and you know, one of the parts of the tour that we're doing is going into former factory towns and talking about the loss of prosperous working class jobs, the manufacturing base. But here you still have some of that base. You still have some of that former prosperity. I look at a company like Case New Holland, who's been in this community 150 years. This used to be the cream of the crop job, wasn't it?
It actually was. When I got out of the military, I went down to the unemployment office, and they asked me one question. What do you want to work? And I told them right out, I will work anywhere with exception of a factory.
Right.
I don't want to be part of a factory. So
you ended up in a factory.
So 3 days later, they called me up with a factory job. Well, if I didn't take it, my unemployment would be gone. So I had to take care of my family and stuff. And I did accept the job. But here's what happened to me. I didn't like the factory work, but I was surrounded by a group of people that believed in what they were doing, that believed that within their union, but within their union, they could make a difference.
Right.
And that in and of itself grabbed me and pulled me in.
That community.
And what they were able to accomplish. We were so heavy into community activities and having a good job and having structure in our agreement, which allowed us some time off from that job, allowed us to get involved in our community, to strengthen our community, along with what we did to strengthen our product, to strengthen our company. Because, you know, companies are not bad. We have to get along with them. We have Absolutely. To work with them.
Well, like I say all the time, I want companies to be wildly profitable. I want them to build the best products.
Yes.
I want them to use my labor efficiently.
Yes.
I want them to be wildly profitable. And why do I want them to be profitable? Simple. When I sit down at the table, I want some of that.
Yes.
When we do better, we do better. It seems almost like common sense, but in the corporate world, when the company does better, they say, well, more for me, and well, things could get bad, so we're gonna cheat your end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think, you know, fighting these fights, you know, kind of is important.
It is. It's not only important for us, but it's important for our community. It's important for our families. It's important for our safety within that facility.
Right.
It's important that we have a say, and we have a means of taking our grievances forward.
Yeah, you want to change things, but here's the thing: you didn't want to do this job. You wanted no part of this, and yet you spent 40 years doing it.
Yes,
and there had to be some pride in building this product. There had to be something there. You know, I talked to a bunch of people who said, you know, I never wanted to be a factory worker, but this affords me a lifestyle that I can support my family, that mm-hmm. I can lead a life, and that's what a job should be.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you found passion in it. Yes, you found interest in it. You found you want to do the best job. But ultimately, it comes down to, how are you going to support your family?
Exactly. And that's, you know, and not only support your family, but the coworkers, the other families that were surrounding you.
Right, the community.
If you see, if you see people that are hurting and you have a good job and you have the time to help and the will to help, which was there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
In our union, this was the area. This was the avenue that gave you that ability to do that.
Right. So I mean, you know, again, you're painting, you know, basically what the premise of our tour is. This was kind of almost Norman Rockwell-esque. Leave it to Beaver Town. You know, Dad went off to work. One income could support a family. You had, you know, these great communities. So what went wrong? You know, how do we get to this point to where now this is no longer, even in the near top wage jobs, that could do the kind of things that you're talking about? How do we get here?
You know, we had some good owners and good leaders in our company, right? Just like we had good leaders in our union. But the company, they had a lot of the same ideology that we had. Build a good product. People matter, right?
Communities matter. No, and the people matter thing's important because, you know, I say this all the time. I worked for a company who, you know, this is years ago. They used to tout the fact they had a 1% turnover rate because their workers were happy working where they were. They got good wages. They got good benefits. And they stayed. So they had the best qualified people doing the job.
Yep.
And this is where, you know, I look at this strike where you got these scabs coming across the line, and many of them don't know the round end of a hammer, let alone, you know, which tires to put on something. And you wonder why maybe you're not going to get the best products. If I'm the employer, I want my best qualified people doing those jobs.
Well, exactly. But you have to remain competitive to get that done. Okay. If you can't remain,
but they're competitive. They're making wild profits.
They're on the company side, but sharing that profit with the workforce, the workforce is what actually puts that product together.
Amen.
You know, I do. When I was doing some orientation with new hires, I would always tell them, you know, you question a union sometime. Some of you don't know what a union is about, but I'm going to tell you. You own the hands that make the product, that make the profit. Now, profit's not bad because you're going to want to reach into that to help support your family.
Yep.
But you own those hands, and that's where your strength and your power comes from. And that's why labor disputes happen, because for some reason, the company does not value the hands that are making the product that makes the profit.
Yeah, there's this mentality that anyone can do your job. And look, I couldn't nor would I want to.
Right.
So there are people who, like you, who created this. So now, obviously, we've got this strike going on here at Case New Holland. It's been going on almost 6 months. you yourself, I'm sure you've been on strike a number of times over the years. Because as an old-timer once told me, he goes, look, if you want to maintain the lifestyle that you have, you want to protect the wages, the hours, the conditions, the benefits, you want to protect that stuff, you may have to go on strike, and you better be prepared for it.
Yes.
But you may have to protect it.
Yes.
And I'm sure over your years, you've been out there to fight for to protect things. So what are these guys and gals thinking right now?
Well, I couldn't. I was part of the leadership during 2004 when we went out on strike for 5.5 or 6 months. And I can tell you firsthand what we went through as far as the thought process. We knew that, and again, they were trying to bring our wages down. That's when the two-tier system came in. And, of course, the company wanted a part of that. All right? Well, if you're part of a union, that's like the worst thing that could happen. Yeah, to
absolutely.
Right?
The two-tier wage system was just the dumbest thing anyone allowed in.
And that's where we were at. That's what we were fighting against. And we knew that we need to communicate that to our members. Back then, though, we didn't have a lot of people. We had a lot of people questioning, but we didn't have a lot of people crossing, for one, because the company locked us up. Okay? So it was a lockout situation also. Although there was no way we were willing to accept what they were offering. Eventually, we had to do some compromising, and the company had to do some compromising, and we came together, and that's what I'm hoping will happen here soon. Okay?
Have you seen, in looking at what has been negotiated here, do you see that the compromise as equal? Because I saw a last, best, and final offer that, you know, I don't know how anyone could take. But do you see that compromise happening? Or has this been the company imposing their will and the union going, well, we don't have a choice?
You know, I'd like to comment on that, but I'm not part of the negotiations.
As an outsider, as someone who's, you know, you've been part of this, you're an observer like anybody else watching from the outside. You know, what are the members thinking? What are the members seeing when this is coming up? Is it that scenario that I've laid out, or is it something different?
Well, when you go into a strike, a lot of people realize, a lot of the members realize that the hands that make the product and make the profit are owned, and we can do something with this. We can do something with the power and the skill that we have.
Right. Workers have power.
Yes.
That's an important message right from the start.
Right. So, we realize this. But as time goes on, and it depends on how the message gets out and how the company reacts, too. If the company shows a will to want to put things back together, it's a little different than them not showing a will.
Yeah, no, look, if someone wants to work with you, I get that. If someone wants to sit down and you're hammering out an agreement, you're at the table, you know, long hours, as opposed to someone who walks in 5 minutes, slaps down a thing and said, this is it, take it or leave it. There's a difference that you're willing to work with one as where the other you're going to, you're probably, anyone is going to probably repel from the idea of having something imposed on them.
Exactly. And at this point, though, you have to see something.
Right.
You have to see a company that wants to put things back together. I've often said that just with the amount of money that they paid the strike replacement workers, that money alone could have satisfied the demands in the contract.
Isn't that amazing?
Just that money.
Isn't it amazing that they're willing to pay scabs an enormous amount of money?
Yes.
I saw this in the strike of nurses up in, I think it was Massachusetts, where they literally spent $10 million on scab nurses, where all the workers were asking for was about $2 million.
Yeah.
They literally spent like five times as much as they had to, but it was about more than just money. It was about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see that being the dynamic here more than the economic part? Because as you said, look, they're spending a lot of money on these scabs where they could have from the beginning come to the table, negotiated something fair for both sides. Because nobody wants the pendulum to swing too far to the other side either. Because that means the company could go out of business. We want a fair share of what is earned, right?
And in 2004, there was we understood what the end game was. The second tier, the two-tier wage structure, which was happening throughout manufacturing, grocery stores.
Yeah.
I mean, all over the place.
No, it was screw the unborn. We did that.
We understood that. We understood what the company's end game was. And this strike, although I'm not privy to all the information and all of the dialogue that went across the table, I'm not privy to that, and nor do I want to be. I want to be able to support the people, my family, my union family. I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to support them in any way that I can. I don't see the company. I guess I don't understand their end game, because if it were money, it would have been solved a long time ago. But when they went out on strike, and only just a few hours later, they had strike replacement workers, that tells you right out that they had no intention.
Yeah, they were planning
of coming up with an agreement before the end of the.
So are you saying that you believe this is motivated by union busting? Because look, if you're in this day, if you're a corporate CEO right now, breaking a union is the in thing to do.
It is, but I think that finally, after many, many years of our unions being in decline, I'm talking about all of the numbers, the amount of union members that you had. I mean, we had 42% union members in this country at one time, 38 to 42%. And it's down to, what, 9, 10?
Six in the private sector.
Six in the private sector, yes. So,
which is why I think a lot of people don't understand, why these strikes happen. You know, why is it, you're getting paid, you can go somewhere else if you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the response I get from people. Go, well, you're covering these strikes, so who cares? Yeah. They should just go somewhere else because there are other jobs. And I go, I don't know. I'm a believer in you build something. I want to make something better. Even if I'm leaving, I want to leave something better behind. Mm-hmm. And the wealth that, as you've pointed out, the hands that create that wealth should share in it. So I'm more of a fighter in that view.
Yeah.
And I think most people, when you break it down into that scenario, going, look, you create an enormous amount of wealth. You've earned part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You should be fighting for.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. But when they didn't want to, when I recognized right away that they didn't want an agreement, I kind of thought they had another agenda. It's turning out that I believe that point of view is stronger now than ever before. I'm not sure exactly where they want to end up.
Yeah.
If they want to...
the worst scenario is that they don't know where they want to end up. And as the president of the local here said, the only person who benefits in this entire scenario is the lawyer who's collecting the fees.
Exactly.
Because the workers, nobody wants to be on. Oh, yeah. You never wanted to go on strike. Nobody wants this.
Yeah.
People want to be able to go to work, support their family, live their lives. They don't want this to be the center of their life. Because as you know, you've been on strike. This now consumes the family, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. And every decision that you made toward a future and your family's future.
All on hold.
Now, all of a sudden, it changes.
Yeah.
And it may have to change permanently. Because of this, the 6 months is a long time. There's a lot of wages that are lost. Because you've planned the future, you've got commitments.
Yep.
And when you can't meet those commitments, it'll set you back.
Which is why whenever I see a worker go on strike, I go, these people are courageous to stand up and fight for what they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And fight for what is right. And this is where, as a society, we should be supporting these workers. So last question I've got for you, because, obviously you're a big part of this community. And over the past, I'm sure there's been support for the community. How do you see the community supporting these Case New Holland strikers now? What kind of response do you see? Is it good? Is it enough? Thoughts?
I would say, our community has always realized what we have done. You know, even while we were on strike, we still went and had a hot meal for the homeless, okay? We still sponsored that. And our members actually went out there to take care of that while we were on strike. That's what we're made of, okay? Our community understands how important the workers of Case are. They also understand how important the company is within the community. So in order for them to even support the entire process, I think, has been good. And they've come to us and they've talked to us about it and they've supported us. They don't like to see us hurting, just like we didn't like to see them hurting, and we would come to their aid when we could. So the community support, I think, has been great. It was great in 2004 when we went out for that 6 months.
So real quick, 30 seconds, last message for the workers who are on strike. What do you tell them?
I would tell them that they're fighting for a cause. They're fighting for the future and the future of their family, and to raise a standard within their community. Not only their standard will be raised, but the community standard will be raised also when we get through with this.
Good stuff, Jeff. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Quick break right back here from Racine, Wisconsin. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here on the Working Class Radio Tour. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show, progressive talk with a conscience. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while we were out standing in the freezing rain, and I'll tell you, it was cold. It was cold and rainy, look, those folks are hardcore out there doing their strike duty. And you know, it's that kind of courage, it's that kind of stamina, it's that the perseverance that they're going to stand up and they're going to fight through all this. But one of the stories that kept coming up time and time again, evidently they've got these scab vans that come in. There's this company that this is what they do. They're strike breakers. They bring in, they move scabs around the country to break strikes. And look, they get paid wildly well for it. I mean, you know, like time and a half for every hour that they work of what they would pay their regular workers. And this is the part that is always amazing to me, that these companies will open up the coffers and just spend to break a strike, to break the workers down, to show their dominance and their power, when they could have just been decent from the beginning and it would have saved them money. That's why this isn't about money. This isn't about wages. This isn't about benefits. This isn't about any of the stuff that workers care about. This is about power. This is about control. This is about the dictator saying, you're under my thumb. But interestingly enough, these scab vans, you know, who shuffle people back from the hotels that they bring these scabs into and into the workplace, evidently there was a crash and someone was killed. And as the story goes, as it's been explained to me, they wouldn't allow the worker who, I think it was either the son or the father of one of the workers killed, to leave the plant until their shift was over. And you go, who would do that? Well, a company like Case New Holland, who's going to bring in scabs to break a strike, that's who would do this. And there was like a mini revolt within the scabs. I mean, there was almost an organizing campaign of scabs saying, you know, this isn't right. This is the kind of world that we would be in without labor unions, without workers having a voice and a say on the job. This kind of control. And it made me think about, you know, years ago when I worked at a place, and it was a unionized company. The foreman tried that with me. My wife at the time, her mother was not well, and it was, you know, hours until she was going to pass. And, you know, I had to go to work that day, and I went in and said, hey, look, you know, if I get a phone call, I'm leaving. Just so you know, if something happens, I'm leaving. And nothing. So 15 minutes before the shift ends, phone rings. It's my wife at the time who says, you know, her mother passed. And I'm like, okay, I'm out the door. I'm on my way. And I went to go punch out. I told the supervisor I'm leaving. He goes, no, you only got 15 minutes. Like, you go finish that. I go, that ain't happening. I told you I'm leaving. And I left. And in any other workplace, could have been fired for that. That's job abandonment. In fact, you know, the company, you know, kind of pushed a little bit, but knew they were going to lose because I had representation. I had a union behind me. Every worker should feel that kind of empowerment. And even among the scabs, which I have no respect for, the fact that one of their own, a family member, passes and the company is going to say, no, scabs, you can't go. I mean, it's kind of remarkable when you think about it. It's kind of incredible that even for them, this is the world that we would be in. And again, I'm hoping we're heading towards a new future. And I look at the younger generation who's getting the idea of community and culture and people being together. I'm getting this sense that, you know, maybe the future is not going to be a divide and conquer. Maybe the future is going to be working people standing together and saying, you know what?
We're not going to put up with it. You know, we're not going to allow this kind of dictatorial situation to happen and continue to tear us apart. But again, I'm telling you, you know, we're in this moment where we had better figure out how we come together and we fight back. And
the Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college, learn new instruments, start skateboarding. Whoa! Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Gnarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Look through your children's eyes, and you'll see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. When they discover the forest, their imagination is inspired by the smell of pine, the crunch of leaves beneath their feet, the sound of birds calling out for attention. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating forest world. You are the hero in this book. This is a memory being made. This is what they will laugh about years from now. These are the roots, grounding and nourishing them.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Then look through your children's eyes and discover the magic all around you. That's discovertheforest.org, brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
My biggest fear in the middle of my addiction was that my kids wouldn't have a father. And I started thinking, you know what? This isn't my story. I definitely had to become a better man to be a better father. It's important to me that my kids are empowered and truly believe that if they can think it, they can do it.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. Some prominent Wisconsin Republicans expressing skepticism about former President Trump's plan to run for president again in 2024. Former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan told ABC News, quote, "I want to win and we lose with Trump. It was really clear to us in 18, in 20, and now in 2022, unquote. Ryan, who criticized Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election and calls himself a never again Trumper, said those elections underscored declining support for conservatives in Wisconsin suburbs. WISC News reporting that Trump's lead decreased by nearly 7 percentage points in Ozaukee County. In 2016, Trump won Wisconsin by 27,000 votes. In 2020, he lost by about 21,000. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
...acted to inflate the value of its stock to benefit rich shareholders. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, couldn't consumers just switch to Huggies, the brand sold by P&G's main competitor? No, for it's a co-monopolist, having also goosed up its prices.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So back here in the UAW Hall here in Racine, Wisconsin, as we're talking about the Case New Holland strike. And you may remember, we were back in Burlington not too long ago talking about the striking workers there as well. Their brothers and sisters on the line here, and I'm sitting here. And again, this is one of those moments where you go, we need to support our striking brothers and sisters, and that's why I'm sitting here with Tanera Hamilton Ford. She's an assembly operator at Case New Holland, one of the striking workers. Tanera, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, you know, looking at the situation that we're in, and this is, you know, again, you know, no worker wants to be on strike, right? Yeah. This isn't where you want to be.
No, not at all.
You want to be, you're collecting a paycheck. You want to be working. You want to be building the best product you can build. This, you want to know part of this, right?
No.
Because this is tough on your family. This is tough on families, isn't it?
It's tough on the family, tough on the community. It has people at odds for no reason because it's a false narrative being painted.
Now, this is an extremely profitable company, as I understand the research that I've done. They do pretty well, right?
Yeah, it's been in the scene for over 150 years.
And the pocketing of the wealth that your labor is creating is kind of it's obscene, wouldn't you think?
Yes.
So, what are you looking for? What at the end of the day, when you say, you know, this is the reason we're out here. Was it? You know, we've heard, you know, all across the country, it's hours, it's work-life balance, it's wages, it's healthcare benefits, it's the moving of jobs. So from your perspective, what is it that you see?
I see that the company is getting away from the work-life balance. I'm a third and fourth generation caseworker on both sides of my family. And so I grew up seeing my grandfather and great-grandfather take care of our family on one income, being able to take care of 5 to 6 kids, foster kids, grandkids on that income. Now working that case, I've been there a year. I see people still in there having to maintain 2 and 3 jobs while their spouse is maintaining the job also to be able to take care of their job. The offer they're offering us right now would be $1.50 raise over the course of a 3-year contract. Does that sound suitable to you when inflation is steady going up? Imagine a person with a family, a husband, 2 kids, groceries, you're spending about $500-$600 on groceries alone.
No, but you know, the other part of this is someone will say, Tamara, that $1.50 sounds great because we don't get anything in the rest of the world. So you have all these other workers who are going, well, I didn't get any raise. You've got something, you should be happy with that. The reality is, and this is where I bring this back, this company is wildly profitable. They're making a lot of money off of your labor. And you should be able to, you and your brothers and sisters here should be sharing in that. This is where the conversation, I think, should be going.
Yes, and then there's also a lot of non-union companies that are around and new companies that are around that are seeing where the workforce is going. There's a lot of people, new generation workers who aren't willing to stick it out and wait and see what the company offers or anything like that, or they feel I'm better than this, or there's plenty of jobs out there. The market needs me more than I need the market at this point. A lot of people are going to entrepreneurship.
No, look, you know, at the end of the day, you know, companies like Case New Holland, companies like Ingredion, the picket line we were on in Cedar Rapids, you know, all the workers say the same things. We've got options now. And you may not get the best qualified people to come back and build your machines and build your products.
Not only that, you have to be able to have the knowledge to show people how to build the machines and build the products. You can't just, it's different being hands-on and going off of a blueprint.
No, absolutely. You know, we were in Burlington, Iowa, with your brothers and sisters up there. And, you know, they were saying, look, they're bringing product out of the factory. And things are falling off of it on the highway. There are pieces laying along the side of the road.
You go outside of the plant right now, you'll see tractors with 4 different size tires on them.
And that's, if you're a customer right now, and this is what I've been saying all along, if you're a customer right now, are you looking at one of the products that you used to make? Are you looking at really seriously purchasing something that's coming off of a scab line?
Exactly. And I'm pretty sure no one, no matter how much money they have, wants to spend almost $500,000 over something that's going to fall apart.
That's got 4 wheels of terror. I mean, seriously, how do you not have the right tire? But again, this is why, you know, you have, you know, CEOs and you have, you know, the wealth class of this country who thinks what you do is any idiot can do it. We can plug in anyone to do what you do. And the reality is that's not true.
It's not true. And it's also, you have to, It's not only a mindset, it's the heart to be in it. It's a lot.
Yeah, you're going to want to do it.
You have to want to do it. And there's a lot that goes on behind closed doors that people don't know about that you deal with.
Yeah, no. In fact, we talked with a guy actually in Burlington, and he said, I asked him flat out, is this what you wanted to do with your life? He goes, no. I wanted to do something else, but I take pride in the work that I do. I'm absolutely the best at my job. And he was very clear. He goes, look, this is how I support my family. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to give it my 100% best. And, you know, I'm all in here. And he said, look, I don't think the company's all in here. And that's from an employee standpoint who is giving your time, your energy, your blood, sweat, and tears to this company. That's got to be angering.
It's angering. It makes you feel less worthy of, like your work isn't appreciated, especially when you're taking time away from your family and your loved ones to give them profit.
Yeah. Now, you talked a little bit about life-work balance before.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that we heard on the Ingredion strike in Cedar Rapids, the guy was telling me that the company wanted to, in the contract, make it that they only had to work 14 days straight, 12 hours a day, if the company wanted to. And you go, what kind of life can you have, you know, working 14 straight days, you know, 12, maybe 14 hours a day? What kind of a scenario are you looking at here? I mean, because I've heard this a lot, that we're just numbers, we're just, you know, they just work us to death. Is that been the experience?
So my year at Case, we worked mostly 9 to 10 hour days, 6 a.m. to 3:30 or 4:30. And then we worked Saturdays, 6 to 2:30. Saturdays were voluntary. And then there were no set hours. One minute it was like, oh yeah, we're going to have overtime this week. You come in, no overtime. We don't have the parts. Then you come in this week, there's no overtime. But then by Wednesday, Thursday, you guys are working at 4:30 and we need you to work Saturday.
Could you blame that on the pandemic? Because I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, it's the pandemic, supply chain shortages, all that stuff. Is that part of that, or is it just poor planning?
It's both. The pandemic plays a part in it, but it's also management not paying attention to their schedule, not paying attention to the parts, being greedy, trying to force stuff out. I hate to take up for a scat right now, but those poor tractors that's built outside of the factory, those aren't necessarily the scab's fault. That's management pushing things, knowing they don't have the parts for it, knowing they're not taking the time to properly build things. When you bring some to their attention that, oh, I don't have the proper tools for this, or this isn't down, they're not taking the time to actually listen.
Yeah. Well, again, a lot of this is if management would just listen. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Tanira Hamilton Ford. She's an assembly operator here at Case New Holland here in Racine, Wisconsin. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show on the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour as we're going across the country talking to workers and voters up until the election. So what ends this? I mean, this has been nearly 6 months. What is it that makes you go, you know what, okay, we've accomplished what we set out here to do. How do we move this forward?
You have to offer your workers better benefits. Give them something that's give them the bang for the buck. You can't offer a person an insurance plan where it's a $13,000 deductible for a family and $6,000 deductible for a single person.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. That's one of those things where you go, it's almost like not having insurance.
Basically.
And that's part of their proposal?
Yes.
Wow. So basically, your any raise that you would get would be eaten away by healthcare costs.
It wouldn't even be in raise. At the end, you would be making less than what you're currently making because of that premium.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I hear that, and look, I just stop, because that's just so outrageous that they know you can't accept this. So do you think that you were pushed out onto the strike? Do you think that they made an offer so bad that no one would take it to kind of push in this direction?
I believe Case made a horrible offer because of they have a younger generation working in there, and they thought that people would fall for it and didn't know their rights, wouldn't ask, didn't have any weren't educated on the things that were going on as far as benefits and things like that. And that's not the case.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a part of an education system. And to bring a more, look, your generation, the younger generation, a little more militant than past generations.
Yes.
In this moment. Because, look, you came out of the pandemic, and you were told you were essential. You're frontline heroes. Yes. That meant something, didn't it?
Yes.
And what did it mean to you? I mean, because before the pandemic, people were going, just happy to have a job. You know, I'm just happy to, you know, but just happy to have this situation. Now we went through a couple of years of saying, oh, hey, thank you, and being effusive with praise. No raises, no better standard of living, but lots of nice words. That had to mean something.
The words meant a lot, like the first month or two. And yeah. It's like, I would like to be noticed more financially, as far as benefits, anything, for my work. Show gratitude.
Yeah,
well, pizza is not going to cut it. A thank you is not going to cut it.
Yeah, those platitudes are wonderful until my bank account runs empty.
Yes.
Can't eat platitudes. So I guess last line of questioning I've got for you, in this moment, you see your brothers and sisters who, again, I've never met anyone, and you're in a long line of people that I've talked to who've been on strike. Not one person has ever said, boy, I'm happy to be here. Not one person has said, I wanted to strike. But what are your brothers and sisters thinking in this moment? It's been almost 6 months. What's the message going forward?
The message is for Case to get it together and respect us. People of Racine has been holding this factory, this plant in this city for 150 years. Like I said, I'm a third and fourth generation worker. My great-grandfather came to Racine from Mississippi in the 1960s, a little country boy with his two pair of pants, his two pair of shoes, met my grandmother, and he worked his ass off. He came to Case. He started on the bottom. He ended his career in 1993 as a supervisor. Took care of my grandmother and met her with five kids, and he took care of them as his own. He bought a house in the middle of the city of Racine going into downtown, which at the time was an upper-class neighborhood. He did that all in the 1960s.
This was the kind of a job where you could do that. And, yes. And again, you know, I go back to my childhood. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And when you saw people get union jobs, their lives got better. And these kind of jobs, where there's so much wealth being created, should be creating those lifestyles again.
Yes.
It should be there for your generation and for your children and going forward. If they're going to prosper off of your labor, off of the foundation of this community, they should be given back to the community.
Yes, and not to mention it's an industry that's not going anywhere. It's agriculture.
Yeah.
People have to eat.
There you go. Tanira, I appreciate you taking time for us. One day longer, one day stronger, sister.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I want to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell us what you think. I want to hear it here on the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour. Back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up our time here in Racine at the UAW Hall here, talking about the Case New Holland strike and the workers here, figured pull in the elder statesman, pull in someone who has seen all the battles, all the fights, and, well, been part of all this for a very long time. John Drew's a retired UAW 74 president, also UAW Region 4 rep. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Good. Good to be here, and that's Local 72.
72. Oh, yeah, I screwed that up. Look at that.
No problem.
So why are we here? You know, you're the guru. You're the guy who knows it all, everything. Why are we here?
Well, we're here because the members of Local 180 had the courage to stand up to a multinational company and demand what was rightfully theirs, and they're willing to fight for it, and they have been out there on the lines for almost 7 months now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at these strikes, and you know nobody wins in these, sadly, and the companies push this stuff. I look at this, and I'm going, I don't see any reason to be here. You know, you look at the, how profitable this company is, how much they've spent on bringing in subpar labor, how much they've done. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me from the outside.
It totally makes sense to me.
Okay, why does this make sense?
CNH is here because they can be, okay? They're here because the laws in this country are set up to favor a large corporation like this, and it allows them to flex their power, okay? They're here because it's difficult for us to organize workers because the labor laws are stacked against us, okay? They're here because plants like Chrysler in Kenosha have closed, so the labor market standards have gone down over the years. We're here because they have steadily over the last 40 years been attacking our standards of living. And, you know, they are a huge company, and they believe that they have the power, and they believe there is nothing to stop them, and the workers are standing up against that. So does it make any sense? It absolutely makes sense to CNH.
On the long term, then. You're looking long game, then. Short term, I'm looking at all the money that they're wasting, you know, bringing in scabs, sending out a subpar product, you know, ruining their name. On the short term, I just look at the fact that we're talking millions of dollars that they could have saved, but you're talking long game, right?
CNH does not want the workers to get a win. Okay?
This is just a big, you know, I've got the power and you don't. Is that what I'm taking?
Well, I have the power and I can exercise it, and I don't want the union to get a win, because then that reverberates to the other CNH plants, and they see that unionizing would be a good idea.
Right.
Okay, they want to beat the union, and it's all about that, and they have a certain amount of money that they're willing to spend on labor costs, and they don't want to go above that.
And also the power and control angle.
Well, the power and control, but it all goes back to money.
Right.
Okay.
It's all dollars and cents.
They would much rather use their money to for stock buybacks, or, you know, and their stock buybacks are just like ridiculous how much money they spend on stock buybacks, which just enriches the shareholders, which in turn enriches the top management of the company. So, you know, they're here. It's all about money.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you could say it's about some, you know, they don't like us or they're mean to us. It's all about money. And where they see that they can make money and that they can hold the line here, that's why we're here. And the workers, what the workers are asking for is totally reasonable. Okay, it is.
So what are they asking for?
They're asking for a fair wage that's going to keep up with inflation. They're asking for insurance benefits that are not overly costly or burdensome with high deductibles and things like that. You know, they're asking to be treated fairly in the workplace. That's it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, most workers, you know, you talk to the workers who aren't unionized, they don't get wages that are keeping up with inflation. They don't get treated well. There's this sense of, you know, why should you and I'm not?
Because it's what we deserve. It's why we have a union.
And I would argue it's what you earn. And the other part of this being all of the workers out there who are looking at this going, well, I don't have the ability to fight this. I ask why they don't and why we should be expanding their ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, right?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, other workers shouldn't look at...
But we're that society, John. You have health care and I don't. You shouldn't have it.
Okay,
that seems to be the mentality.
That's the politics of resentment, okay? And that's what the ruling class wants. That's what the top 1% wants. They want us to resent each other for what we have rather than saying, look at what they have. I want to fight to get that.
And this is where that divide and conquer comes in, and which is why it's so important to have a community support a strike like this, because ultimately – when these workers win a victory, it's going to trickle down to the rest of the community. No,
sure, and not only is it about this, but also, you know, we have a United States Senate race going on in Wisconsin right now. Okay, and we have two candidates who could not be any further apart in terms of the way they look at workers and what workers deserve. Okay,
yep.
We've got Ron Johnson, who basically, instead of fighting for jobs at Oshkosh, which is another UAW facility, he said, we've got enough jobs in Wisconsin. We don't need those jobs.
How is that not the first thing anyone says when Ron Johnson's name came up?
It, amongst our members, it is the first thing that people say. Okay?
It should be the only thing. He wants to send jobs to anti-union South Carolina.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you got Mandela Barnes, who is the son of a UAW member who has been brought up sort of steeped in the UAW and the union, who would be a very important vote and voice in the Senate for working people to get some of these laws changed so that it's easier to organize unions, such as the PRO Act, you know, to do things in terms of health care so that health care isn't such a massive issue in negotiations. So, you know, the stakes couldn't be clearer in the United States Senate race.
And again, this is where the broader politic comes in, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Why we need worker-centric politicians who are going to pass, something as meager as that crummy Employee Free Choice Act that they were throwing around that didn't get done, or the strike replacement bill during the Clinton years that didn't get done, or the end of Taft-Hartley during the Carter years that didn't get done. So, you know, isn't the argument that Democrats haven't delivered on the things that they said they were going to do?
Well, that's
because look, I come to this point where Republicans hate working people. Their policies show that. But the party of the working people are the Democrats. They haven't been overly friendly either.
Okay, that's why Mandela is such an important candidate. Okay, Mandela Barnes is the type of candidate that we should have had for years and years.
Absolutely.
In the Democratic Party. Okay, and that's why it is essential that people get out and they, you know, because we're going to win this election if we can mobilize workers, young people, women, communities of color. That's how we're going to win this election.
No, and I look at I look at what's going on and this strike here at Case New Holland and this being kind of, you know, one of that canary in the coal mine scenarios. Which side are you on in this situation? Ron Johnson, has he showed up to the picket line to help your members? Did he bring anything with him?
If Ron Johnson would have showed up to the picket line, he would have been booed off the line. Okay, Mandela has been here time and again. You know, he's showed up. He knows what it's about. You know, this fight is his fight.
So last question I've got for you, how does this end? How does this story end here?
That last chapter is yet to be written, and it's going to be up to the members of Local 180 in terms of how this particular story ends.
Well, the hope is one day longer, one day stronger. Brother Drew, I appreciate you taking time for me.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff, John Drew. Retired UAW 72 former head there, also Region 4 rep. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up our time here in Racine, I got to tell you, I'm still soaking wet from being out on that picket line. Dummy me doesn't bring an umbrella. You know, we embark on a 30-day tour, and nobody thought, hey, maybe we should bring an umbrella. And then the weird thing is we've been chasing rain this entire trip, just about. Almost every place we went, especially at the beginning, it was rain. It was, you know, and you would think umbrella at some point would have bought one. No, just standing out there in the rain. But the reality is these working folks, they were out there too. And I give them credit. As I said, this is going to be a long strike, I fear, because the companies dug in into their want and thirst for power. And I keep coming back to, I think it's going to matter when the shareholders go, wait a second, you're screwing with the value of this company. You're screwing with the value of the product. And when customers start going, you know what, we're going to go somewhere else. Maybe that's when this ends. Because clearly this is a company that is not interested in negotiating in good faith. Clearly this is a company that is not interested in coming to a reasonable, fair agreement. Because these guys aren't asking for anything
Nothing outrageous. It's not like we want 100% raise over the next 60 days. No, they're asking for a reasonable share of the profit that their labor creates. And, you know, good on them. It's about time that working people stand up and say enough. And, you know, they really, you know, you listen to their stories, they really internalized that whole, you know, we're heroes things. You know, we're essential. We matter. They took it to heart, as we all should. So my thoughts are, our hearts are with these folks. Our fight is with them. And one day longer, one day stronger, brothers and sisters. But here from Racine, we're going to wrap up our day here. Heading to Toledo, Ohio tomorrow. Looking forward to talking with Marcy Kaptur and some folks in the Toledo area. Also want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the pod.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.